A riverboat pushes against the current, deeper into uncharted territory. The forest closes in, pressing against the tiny vessel like something solid. Drums echo through the night. Invisible eyes watch from the shadows. Somewhere ahead, through the fog and fever dreams, waits a man who has seen too much, a man whose final words will haunt literature for over a century. The horror, the horror. Joseph Conrad's 1899 novella remains one of the most debated, adapted, and influential works in modern literature. Francis Ford Coppola transplanted it to Vietnam in Apocalypse Now. T.S. Eliot borrowed its imagery for The Hollow Men. Countless writers from Graham Greene to Chinua Achebe have grappled with its vision of human nature stripped bare. What makes this slim book so enduring? Perhaps because Conrad, a Polish sailor who learned English in his 20s, managed to capture something essential about what happens when civilization's constraints fall away and we confront what lies beneath. We begin on a pleasure yacht near London at sunset. Four men await the turning tide aboard the Nelly. As darkness falls, Charlie Marlowe, resembling an idol in his meditative pose, breaks the silence. And this also has been one of the dark places of the earth. He's talking about London, the heart of the British Empire, suggesting darkness exists not just in savage lands, but at civilization's core. The framing device is brilliant. Rather than hearing Marlowe's story directly, we experience it through an unnamed narrator listening alongside us. This creates layers of distance, while paradoxically drawing us deeper into the tale's spell. Marlowe is no ordinary sailor. He's a wanderer who hates lies and sees beyond surfaces. His tale begins conventionally. Seeking employment, he uses his aunt's connections to secure a riverboat captain position with a Belgian trading company. Before departing, he undergoes a strange medical examination where a doctor measures his skull, hinting at the pseudo-scientific racism permeating the era. The framing establishes that Marlowe has returned, fundamentally changed. By the tale's end, when we return to the Nelly, facing the heart of an immense darkness, London itself, we understand that the colonial metropolis and colonial outpost are mirror images separated only by degrees of restraint. Marlowe's African journey reveals escalating horror. A French warship fires blindly at the continent. There was a touch of insanity in the proceeding. At the company's outer station, he finds senseless destruction, black workers dying as shadows, men blasting cliffs without purpose, broken machinery scattered everywhere. The scene evokes a gloomy circle of some inferno. An immaculately dressed accountant first mentions Kurtz, a very remarkable person, sending more ivory than all other agents. At the central station, the hollow general manager maintains power simply by not falling ill. Marlowe's sunken steamboat delays his journey months. During this wait, Kurtz's mystique intensifies through whispers, eloquent, educated, possessing moral ideas, yet disturbing hints emerge about his methods. Conrad masterfully builds tension through delayed revelation, allowing Kurtz to exist as rumor and reputation. Meanwhile, Marlowe grows critical. The conquest of the Earth, which mostly means taking it away from those who have a different complexion or slightly flatter noses than ourselves, is not a pretty thing when you look into it too much. The journey upriver forms the novella's haunting centerpiece, a physical passage that doubles as psychological descent. As Marlowe's steamboat pushes against the current, civilization recedes and the forest closes in, impenetrable to human thought. The river becomes fascinating, deadly, like a snake. Marlowe's crew includes white pilgrims obsessed with ivory and 30 indigenous cannibals who prove remarkably restrained despite near starvation. This restraint fascinates Marlowe. What possible restraint? Was it superstition, disgust, patience, fear, or some kind of primitive honor? The question of what prevents humans from indulging their darkest impulses becomes central. The atmosphere grows oppressive. Mysterious drum beats echo through the forest. The wilderness presses against the tiny steamboat. Marlowe senses the lurking death, the hidden evil, the profound darkness of its heart. Conrad's prose becomes hallucinatory. Going up that river was like traveling back to the earliest beginnings of the world. 50 miles from Kurtz's station, they find a hut with firewood and a warning note. 8 miles from their destination, natives attack with arrows, killing the helmsman. This river journey represents not just geographical exploration, but regression through evolutionary time into the human unconscious itself. After the buildup, Kurtz appears not as a titan, but as a skeletal figure on a stretcher, an animated image of death carved out of old ivory. Yet his voice remains powerful, dominating the novella's final movement. Through Kurtz, Conrad explores what happens when human appetites are unleashed without social restraint. Kurtz arrived with noble intentions, commissioned to write a report for the International Society for the Suppression of Savage Customs. The report begins eloquently, arguing Europeans must appear to them as supernatural beings bringing progress. But a scrawled postscript reveals his transformation: exterminate all the brutes. Freed from constraints, he has established himself as a god among local tribes, conducting unspeakable rites and decorating his compound with human heads on stakes. What makes Kurtz fascinating is his self-awareness. Unlike other Europeans hiding exploitation behind bureaucracy, Kurtz embraces his darkness. His final words, the horror, suggest recognition of what he has become. Marlowe develops a strange kinship with him despite his monstrosity. Both have glimpsed beyond civilization's veneer, but where Kurtz surrendered to darkness, Marlowe resisted. Kurtz represents colonialism stripped of pretenses, not bringing light to darkness, but revealing the darkness within the supposed light-bearers. After Kurtz's death, Marlowe returns transformed. A year later, he visits Kurtz's intended in her darkened Brussels apartment, where she still mourns, idealizing him as a great humanitarian. When she asks about his final words, Marlowe lies. The last word he pronounced was, "Your name." This betrays his principle that Kurtz's greatness lay in facing truth without illusions. The scene crystallizes Conrad's vision. Her pale forehead recalls the ivory that drove men mad. Civilized drawing room and wilderness outpost are two faces of the same reality. Back on the Nelly, Marlowe falls silent. The narrator gazes toward London, where the tranquil waterway leading to the uttermost ends of the earth flowed somber under an overcast sky, seemed to lead into the heart of an immense darkness. The darkness Marlowe encountered in Africa exists equally at European civilization's heart. Conrad offers no easy answers, suggesting complete moral purity may be impossible in an impure world. Heart of Darkness operates as adventure story, psychological study, political critique, and philosophical meditation. Its questions about civilization's nature, human knowledge's limits, and our capacity for creation and destruction remain urgent. The novella has influenced works from Lord of the Flies to Apocalypse Now, yet remains controversial for its portrayal of Africa, making it central to post-colonial studies. Conrad's cower lies in refusing easy answers. The novella reveals civilization not as achievement, but as fragile construct requiring constant maintenance. The veneer separating civilized from savage proves dangerously thin, an insight extending beyond colonialism to corporate exploitation, political corruption, and military abuses. In our era of environmental destruction, renewed nationalism, and global inequality, Heart of Darkness continues speaking across time. Its vision of human nature, capable of both restraint and terrible excess, offers no comfort, but perhaps some wisdom. The darkness Conrad mapped exists within all human hearts when restraint fails and power operates unchecked. As Marlowe observes, the mind of man is capable of anything because everything is in it, all the past as well as all the future.